Chapter 24. Louise stayed overnight in a hotel on the Strand. Restless, anxious, he was up before the dawn, long before his appointment with Hackett and Burden. He made his way down to the river, where in the grey light the mudlarks dug for wood and coins and bits of coal. Children and old women up to their knees in cold riverbed ooze. And he saw the sewer hunters emerging from their tunnels with their hoes and poles, coated in filth, splitting whatever grimy haul they had retrieved from the muck. Even in the city streets there was activity at this hour. The bone grubbers sifting garbage for anything they could eat or wear or sell on. All these people were striving to be up before the competition, as if the city was a vast midden infested by human insects, just as Hackett had once said, rooting and sifting and consuming the slightest morsel they found. By 8, Louise had made his way to Charing Cross, where the others were waiting by the brougham that would take them to Windsor. This time the three of them, all older, Oswald Hackett was in his late 50s now, were met only by the man they knew as Mr. Radcliffe, with a few hefty flunkies at hand. This encounter took place with the four of them standing somewhat uneasily in a drawing room that Louise suspected was one of the castle's lesser chambers, deep in the bowels of the Conqueror's Tower, but whose carpet alone had probably cost more than all his own holdings combined, and whose walls were adorned with black crepe in the funereal style Victoria had maintained since the death of the consort. Just the four of them, save for servants in suits, who stood by the walls and doorways, looking to Louise's eye like nothing so much as Coldstream guards playing at being butlers, and he imagined he wasn't far wrong. Radcliffe, too, had aged, of course. He must be nearly 60 now, with a greying of the temples, a slight stoop to the posture. But his attention remained blade-like, his stare skewering.
"So, gentlemen," he said, "once again we meet. No prince this time, sadly."
Burden snorted. "But maybe you'll have the widow of Windsor serve us tea, what?" Hackett glared at him. Radcliffe's smile was the kind that did not extend above the line of his thin moustache. His advancing age had not mellowed him, evidently.
"You know why you are here, or I imagine you have guessed. You were all asked to go into the new Germany, and the heart of Berlin in particular. Now here you are with your reports. Would you care to accompany me to the archive? You'll recall it from your previous visit. The staircase down is just along the hall from here."
Hackett would have followed, but Burden grabbed his arm. Burden said, "Not this time, thanks. Getting a bit sensitive to being confined in my old age." Hackett pulled away, eyes narrow, frowning. But Louise was surprised when, for the first time in Louise's memory, he deferred to Burden's leadership. Radcliffe affected mock surprise.
"You, Mr. Burden, the famous gold miner of California, scared of a bit of shut-in? Surely not."
"Occupational hazard. Well, are you serving us tea? Why not take it here?" He glanced around at the beefy servants. "I imagine these fellows are discreet. There's no reason you want us down there, is there?" Radcliffe gave way. He invited them to sit. In short order, a flunky showed up with tea, another bulky fellow. As the man poured, Burden murmured to Louise, "I never thought to see such fine china handled by a gorilla's mitt like that." Now Radcliffe asked for their reports on Bismarck's Berlin. When it was his turn, Louise described the cover he'd devised. "I posed as a theatrical entrepreneur, studying local acts with an eye to booking them for the English theatres. I took a room on the Unter den Linden, from where I had every excuse to stroll past the Prinz Karl Palace and the ministries on the Wilhelmstrasse." All this was by way of summary. They had all had to submit detailed written reports, including sketch maps. It had been enough for Louise to have inspected these great buildings from the outside. The others had waltzed their way inside on more penetrating spying missions. When they had all reported, Radcliffe nodded.
Good, good. Now, I wonder if you have guessed why we have ordered such a mission, and why it had to be you three, the very apex of the pyramid of your Knights of Discorporia.
And he said the words as if they were ashes in his mouth.
That's not hard to guess, Hackett said sternly. I think you mean to strike at Bismarck himself.
Luis was astonished by this allegation, but Radcliffe did not flinch. And Hackett continued relentlessly.
I can even guess of the logic. Go on. To avert a European war. We all remember the poor prince with his dreams of unifying Europe under a drowsy dynasty. He married his and Victoria's eldest daughter to the Crown Prince of Prussia to achieve just that end. Well, that didn't wash with Bismarck. Now you have this tremendous brute of a German dog prowling around a European backyard that has been more or less at peace, as we all know, since the downfall of Napoleon. And in Bismarck you face a man ruthless and determined, and of tremendous political and strategic skill. Who might be the ruin of us all, Radcliffe said, nodding. And who, as you say, has terminated a half-century of relative peace on continental Europe with a terrible war, that he and his successors might spark off more before the hash is settled. No, the man has to go before he does any more harm, and spends any more lives, which is where you gentlemen take the stage.
Hackett nodded thoughtfully.
Well, this is a step up from the Underground Railroad, and your petty bits of spying, even compared to the time you had us go into Sebastopol during the siege.
Luis raised his eyebrows. He hadn't heard of that one. Burden gave Radcliffe a mocking smile. But what exactly is it you would have us do? Abduction? Assassination? Of the German Chancellor? Are you serious? Do you expect us to believe that Her Majesty's government would stoop to such a tactic? This isn't some Balkan principality, you know. And besides, such an act would probably destabilize all Europe and bring us to war even faster than Bismarck, with all his scheming, ever could. Radcliffe kept calm.
It is the will of Her Majesty.
Phooey, said Burden. Produce her, and let her tell us so herself.
Hackett seemed appalled.
Have some respect, man.
Radcliffe stood.
If only you would come to the archive, I could explain the scheme better. We have documentation, maps, reports. It is already an expensive and carefully considered operation.
Burden said, Determined to get us down in that hole in the ground, aren't you? Radcliffe took a breath.
Also, there is someone waiting to see you there. You met a Prime Minister once before in Lord John Russell many years ago. And now...
Burden laughed out loud.
You expect us to believe that you persuaded old Gladstone not just to support your bonkers scheme, but to turn up in person and sit in some cellar, waiting on the likes of us?
Hackett seemed confused.
It does sound rather unlikely, Mr. Radcliffe. If you would care to clarify...
But Burden cut him off. He stood facing Radcliffe. All I would care to clarify is that this meeting is over. Ta-ta, Radcliffe, and thanks for the tea. Now, if you'll show us back to our brougham.
Now,
Radcliffe said softly. Luis, still sitting, sensed rather than heard the massive form step up behind him. Then it was as if a thunderclap went off inside his head. He was aware of two, maybe three, powerful men grabbing him and flinging him to the ground. And he fell into the dark. When he woke, he was in the well-remembered vault under Windsor Castle. Radcliffe, evidently, had got his way. And when he tried to move, Luis discovered that his wrists and ankles were locked in shackles of heavy iron. In the gaslit gloom, just as before, here were the decent but not ostentatious furniture, the shelving with books and records, the doorways leading to further rooms crowded with gifts and gewgaws, the clutter of monarchy. It seemed just as it had been when Albert had leaned against the fireplace opposite, quoting his own speeches about duty, and Luis had thought he glimpsed Victoria hurrying by. All that, he realized, was nearly a quarter of a century ago. But while the room hadn't changed, its human occupants had. Here was Radcliffe, standing before him with a cold smile. Luis, Burden and Hackett, all of them struggling back to consciousness, shackled side by side in armchairs, each with a red-coated soldier at his back. There were more soldiers at the doors, by the walls, even in the rooms beyond. As Luis moved his battered head, the pain returned, a clamoring like gunfire. He bit his tongue to force himself not to cry out. There was a nurse before him, a sweet-faced girl in a uniform. "Drink this," she said. She held up a cup of some liquid to his lips, warm and tasting of honey. He gulped it down greedily, and the pain in his head started to abate. Hackett's face was ablaze with fury. "You all right, Valiente?" "Been better. Head still works. Good man. Burden? Better than you'd think, old boy." Burden seemed oddly at ease, but then, Luis reflected, he seemed to have been in control of events since they arrived here, more so than Hackett. Luis fervently hoped he still was, somehow. Hackett looked up at the man standing before them. "What's the meaning of this? What the deuce are you up to, Radcliffe?" Burden laughed. "Yes, and where's Bill Gladstone? It was all a blind, wasn't it? The whole business of Bismarck. Probably even our bogus trips to Berlin on government money. All a lure to get us into this trap." Radcliffe ignored him and studied Hackett.
"So, Dr. Hackett, are you impressed with the way we took you down? I'm fly to the dodge, you see."
More East End slang, Luis noticed.
"This is the way we've learned to tackle you, waltzers. Hit you with overwhelming force before you've got time to think about it. Before you've time to slip away to whichever corner of hell you godless creatures visit when you're not here. And then, unconscious, bundle you up in a hole in the ground like this, where even you can't waltz out. How do you put it? Either Widdishins or Dishul. Efficient, ain't it? You won't give us the lucky dodge again. We've been practicing, you see."
Hackett glared at him.
"What the devil do you mean?"
And Burden asked more calmly, "Practicing on whom?"
"On more of your sort."
Radcliffe began to pace, calm, thoughtful.
"Here's what you fellows need to understand. Your day's done, you and your flash tricks. You were always something of an indulgence of the old prince, God rest him. But once he had gone, it was clear that Her Majesty had always found you rather repulsive. More shadows than men, she said of you. Meanwhile, I and many of my colleagues have always been suspicious of the power you wield, and the notion that it is only through your own goodwill that we can have any surety that you will not turn your powers against your own government. Why, every one of you, when he's had the chance, has used his talent to enrich himself, has he not? You, Burden, with your phantom gold mine. And you needn't think we haven't unraveled the truth about that. You, Valiente, with your absurd act as the great Illuxivo."
"What, are you a critic now? I got good notices in my time. Why, once in the Observer..."
"Even you, Hackett, pious and pompous as you are now. You weren't so as a younger man, were you? I've a file on you as thick as my arm. No, you're too dangerous to be allowed to run around uncontrolled, you see? And then there's the whiff of..."
He sought the right word.
"The whiff of the unnatural about you. We're British, by God, a manly race, and we don't want your shifty, slippery sort polluting the blood, no matter how useful you may occasionally be. And I'll grant you, you have been. Well, we've decided to bring you in, beginning with you three, among the first to present yourselves here all those years ago. What colossal arrogance you showed then. And now the first to be taken down.
But not the last, Louise realized in a sudden panic. Not the last. Now he feared for his family, for Ella and Robert.
Radcliffe said, And believe me, you'll never see daylight again. As you can see, we have learned how to deal with your kind.
By practicing, Burton said. You told us that. Answer my question then. On whom?
On whomever we could find. We've had the scientists working on it, chaps of the Royal Society, devising a program of testing. Anybody we suspected might have your sort of faculty. The soldier who mysteriously dodged the bullets copped by everybody else in battle. The particularly prolific thief. The particularly persistent jailbreaker. That sort. And then we tested them, to see if they could waltz or not.
Hackett looked appalled.
How, man? By stressing them. Wall a man up in some sarcophagus. Set him in front of a firing squad. Chuck him in a cage and sink it in the Thames. If he can skip out, he'll do so, you see? Mostly it fails. And no, we didn't kill 'em all. But it's no waste if we had. One in 1,000 or less showed signs of what you can do. And once they've stepped out, you might think they'd be away, scot-free and beyond our reach. But many of 'em didn't even know they had the capability before being forced to use it. They had always just escaped unconsciously. And then almost all of 'em came right back again, and straight into the arms of my bonny lads in their red coats. Once we had 'em, it was down into a basement under the Royal Society for all of them. Very systematic people, these scientists. Very methodical. Although if there's something in the brain that enables this waltzing business, well, they ain't found it yet. You're talking about vivisection, Hackett said. You monster!
Radcliffe bridled at that and leaned over him.
You're the monster, man, not me. Do you not even see that clearly?
He straightened up and resumed his pacing.
What we have learned is how rare this ability of yours is. After all, the threat of violent death has been a common occurrence during human history. If waltzing was any more prevalent, you'd think we'd have noticed by now. Anyhow, the government, as expressed through the rather discreet agency for which I work, has come to the decision that for the likes of you, rare isn't enough. Extinct would be preferable. We're considering how to persuade friendly governments to come over to that way of thinking and be done with you once and for all. Certainly once Britain is cleansed, we'll be going out into the colonies with a similar program.
He came to Louise and looked him in the eyes, the mouth, as if inspecting a prize horse.
We'll be merciful. No scragging for you, which is all you deserve.
Scragging? Louise reflected back. Come a long way, haven't you? But there are times when it slips, Radcliffe. Your mouth's like a Whitechapel sewer. Radcliffe curled his lip.
Takes one to know one, Valiente. You'll even be comfortable for a while, you and your families, down here in the dark.
He straightened up.
But when the last of you dies in this cellar or another, that will be the end of it. So much for the nights of discorporea, huh?
We'll see, said Fraser Burden.
What's that?
Burden looked over at Hackett and Louise. Widdershins, he said. Hackett snapped.
What? Impossible, man. We're in a damn cellar.
Burden shrugged and his shackles rattled. Suit yourself? You with me, Louise? On my count. One, two. Louise, unbelieving, waltzed. And found himself in another hole in the ground, this one rough-walled, in a dark relieved only by the light of candles. But his shackles were gone, and so was his chair, and, emerging into thin air in a sitting posture, he fell back onto a rocky floor with a jolt, hard enough to make his head throb anew. He struggled to rise.
Burden? Hackett?
Valiente?
It was Hackett's voice. He must be as bewildered as Luis, and was 10 years older, too. But he had his customary tone of command.
Just sit tight.
He held up a candle to reveal crudely cut walls all around, and what might be a wooden-lined shaft up to the surface. The two of them were alone in here. Hackett asked,
Where the devil are we?
And Luis laughed, and lay back on the cold ground.
In a mine. I see it now. A mine cut by Burden. We mined together in America, remember? We're in a shaft in a stepwise parallel of Windsor. That's how you waltz out of a cellar, by staking out the ground in advance and cutting a hole in the precise same location Widdershins.
My God, you must be right. But Burton must have planned this months, even years ahead, knowing that someday he'd need it. What a suspicious mind the man must have.
He was right, though, wasn't he?
So he was. Where is he, by the way? Why is he not in here with us?
Now I see I always underestimated him. Won't make that mistake again. There was a slight puff of air that made the candles flicker. Burden stepped out of the shadows and walked forward into the candlelight. Hackett demanded,
What have you been up to, man? Why didn't you come over with us?
Well, I did, but once I was free of those iron shackles, I took a few paces and went back. He held up something, a blade dripping dark. A detail I needed to tidy up.
Oh, Burden, Luis said, feeling oddly disappointed. You killed them?
Only that bastard Radcliffe, and he deserved it, don't you think? For what he did to those wretches in the coffins and the underwater cages, for what he intended to do to our families.
Our families? Hackett said. We must get out of this cellar, walk somewhere we can waltz back safely.
I've got the area signposted, Burden said. A one-to-one map. Bit rough, but it will do.
Good man. We get back over. We get our families to safety, and then...
Yes?
And then we consider the future. For us, our families, and our kind, as Mr. Radcliffe called us.
Luis thought he had never heard such a grim tone of voice from Hackett before. Yet he was right. The path ahead was clear. The only path they could take now. They must run to their families and hide from the government's assassins. Gingerly, in the flickering light of the candles, he got to his feet. Nelson, having learned as much as he felt he needed to, went in search of Joshua. But according to the most reliable source on Joshua's whereabouts, the home in Madison, Joshua was gone, vanished once more into the deep, long earth.